Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, aloha, friends. I have a very special episode for you today. I am broadcasting to you today from Hawaii. How fun is that? I'm here today with my friend Monica Swanson. Now, Monica is a Hawaii living, homeschooling boy mom. She is married to a physician and has four boys, and she loves to cheer on families to live lives of faith, connection, and adventure. She is the author of Raising Amazing, Bringing Up Kids Who Love God, Like Their Family, and Do the Dishes Without Being Asked. So a special aloha and welcome to you, Monica. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here too.
Well, you and I have been on each other's shows before, and mm-hmm. we just had a really special connection. I think moms of four, mm-hmm. like, we just get it. There's something special about that. So just tell us a little bit about you and how you ended up in Hawaii mm-hmm. and writing for parents.
Yes. Well, it's been so fun getting to know you, and I just love everything you do. So this is such an honor. And yes, my husband, Dave, and I are both from the Pacific Northwest. We both came from small towns in Oregon and Washington. But 22 years ago, we moved to Hawaii for my husband's medical residency program, thinking it would be a 3-year adventure. But by the time he was done, we had three sons, and he especially had fallen in love with surfing and said, you know what better place to raise kids than here in Hawaii, where we can be outside so much of the time. And a few years later, we had our fourth son, and we have never left. So it's been such a fun adventure. I've homeschooled since the oldest started in second grade, and that's something I never planned on doing or thought I would do, but it's been such a fun part of our adventure here in Hawaii. And now three have graduated from high school, and I've got a 13-year-old still homeschooling. And at some point, I kind of just decided to go online and start sharing a little bit more from our life and, you know, my love for family and parenting and all the things God was teaching me. And that was 12 years ago. That blog kind of grew, turned into some books and a podcast. And now here I am, just having so much fun getting to know families really all over the world and people like you, Jessica.
Well, that is so great. So I think that there's a lot of listeners who are going to be curious about what it's like to really live in Hawaii. Like,
oh, yeah.
What is it like? How do you think it's been different being a mom? What are the great things about it and the challenges that you've had?
Right. Well, I like to tease people and say, oh, it's just like vacation every day, you know, just hanging out, kicking back on the beach. But in reality, there's real life in Hawaii too. And though there's a lot of sunshine and it is really a beautiful place to live, and we do spend a lot of time outdoors, but there's pros and cons everywhere, right? So Hawaii's really expensive. That's a challenge. So all the people that are like, that's it, we're moving to Hawaii, I'm like,
just go to the grocery store.
Right. Oh, yeah. Thank God for Costco. Yeah. And, but we, life is a slower pace here for sure. Everything moves a little slower. You have to adjust your expectations. I think maybe life is a little bit simpler. There seems to be less of a focus on material goods and on who's doing what. It's more about really enjoying each other and family and the outdoors. So there is something really beautiful about that here in Hawaii. But we do have all the same stressors that everybody else has, unfortunately.
You know, the other day when my family and I were driving around the island, on the North Shore, there's a 2-lane road. I mean, the traffic gets really intense, especially during the winter season. And there was a woman in front of us that her husband was trying to teach her how to drive a stick shift. Like, she was trying to learn how to drive a standard. And it was very clear. We were all hearing the gears grind and she couldn't get it. She couldn't get it. So he sticks out his hand out the window and does this shaka sign. That's like hang loose. You know?
Oh, yes.
So everybody is waiting. Now, I'm from Houston. If this was happening in Houston, the horn would have been employed. Mm-hmm. Probably words that are not honoring to the Lord at all would have been flying out of the cars around them. But
all of a sudden, what I noticed was this whole line of cars starts cheering for this woman.
Oh, my goodness.
We're like rooting for her. You know, like we want her to be able to do this. And so when she finally takes off, you can hear because all the windows are down. People start clapping down the road. And then everybody's doing the shaka, you know, hang loose.
Yes.
And it was really convicting to me. I think, you know, you're right about that part of the culture here.
Yes.
Is that life is slower and material things don't matter as much. There's such an emphasis on ohana, right?
Yes.
Which is the Hawaiian word for family, which I really, really love. Now, tell me about your journey to write this latest book about raising amazing, because I think everyone wants to know if you have secrets on raising kids who do the dishes without being asked, like take notes now. We want to know a 3-step formula to make that happen.
Oh, how I wish. I wish there was a formula for all of parenting. But the truth is, I think at some point through my blogging and writing, getting to know people online, I think that there's certain things have just risen to the surface that I know really matters to parents and yet are harder to do than we might think when we first start off. And somehow in my family, just that topic of dishes became kind of a symbol for character. It was like there's a whole lot of things that you can do and that you want kids to do, but somehow we decided as a family that when somebody gets up and just starts doing the dishes without being asked, that's a sign. Like, nobody does that unless they have some pretty good character. And so that kind of represents to us that topic of character. And then the other two main topics in the book really are there in that subtitle as well. It's just raising kids who love the Lord, who want a personal relationship with God outside of just mom and dad dragging them to church or something. And then the sibling relationships and family relationships, kids who love their family. It doesn't always come automatically. You can't assume because we're all in the same family that everyone's going to love each other. So this book really was the three things I feel like I've heard most from people are on their minds, things they want to do but maybe don't know how to do. And listen, our family's not perfect. We've made plenty of mistakes along the way, but these three areas are things we've really been intentional about. So I love to share some of the things I've learned along the way that have worked and are continuing to work today.
Well, that would be great. Let's break those down.
Yeah.
And let's first start about raising kids who love God. I think, you know, when I talk to parents, that is one, as a Christian parent, that's your greatest fear.
Yeah.
Is that your kid is going to grow up, become an adult, reject their faith, and just walk away from the church. I think that is really a deep secret fear that we have.
Yeah.
So what do you have to say about that?
Right. Well, I think there's good reason for that fear. And without encouraging fear, I will say that I think it's important that we understand statistically a great percentage of kids who grew up in the church are leaving the church when they hit independence. Barna's research has been just really kind of shocking and scary. But there's good news to it, too, because the kids who are staying, the kids who choose to continue to go to church, to really want to follow God into their adult years, they've studied what goes on in their homes growing up. What is different about those kids? And that's where I think we should all be tuned in. Instead of being afraid that our kids will leave, let's look at the kids who stay. And what they found is there are certain disciplines that parents have that make it a lot more likely that their kids are going to grow up to have a personal relationship with God. And these aren't difficult things. They're things like showing up to church every week. I mean, there's exceptions, but really being committed to your local church. It's things like reading the Bible as a family, praying as a family. It's really most important, more important than anything, is what mom and dad are modeling, their own relationship with God, because you really can't fake it. You can't hack a relationship with God. Either kids are seeing an authentic relationship with God or not. And so it's some of the most basic things, but things that I think in the busyness of life, a lot of families have neglected to do consistently and authentically that are really going to matter in the big picture.
Those things are simple, but they're not easy to do. And I think, I say this a lot, that I think sometimes parents, they want a snazzier, flashier answer. They think it's got to be something more complex than that. But it's just in the obedience of every day.
It is.
And I say all the time that our faith from ourselves to our kids, it's caught. It's not taught.
Amen.
They are going to do what we are doing. And you talked about this in one of the chapters in your book, and you call it parentamorphosis.
Yes.
It's not a dinosaur. It's parentamorphosis.
Yes.
Model an amazing life. Mm-hmm. And so what are some of those things that we can do as parents? Because so often too, I think when we're talking about modeling our shaping our children's faith, mm-hmm. we think about what do they need to do?
Yes.
What do we need to see in them? What are the activities that I need mm-hmm. to take them to? Instead of looking really honestly at our own spiritual disciplines.
Yes, that is huge. And you're absolutely right. More is caught than taught. And I think that parents too, though, need to realize that this isn't about modeling a perfect life or a perfect faith. It's about being authentic. I think kids are really drawn to parents who are honest and real. And sometimes that means we make mistakes, but we own them. We show them, what does it look like when you mess up? What is your response to the mistakes you make? Do you turn to God? Do you ask forgiveness of the people you've hurt? Do you walk in humility, or are you trying to put up a front and being a hypocrite, which we know is about the worst thing you can do for your kids? So whether it's faith, character, all the different areas of life, I think being authentic is going to be super important.
I couldn't agree more. And one of the things that you talk about is making your marriage a priority.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Making your marriage a priority. We hear about this all the time, but I think that it's super important that we realize that kids are watching. We don't even realize how much they are noticing. I know because my now young adult sons have told me how much they picked up on even when they were young. And so this, again, isn't about having a perfect marriage or, you know, never arguing or getting along perfectly. It's about having an authentic marriage, one where the kids see that you are willing to do the work, that you are walking in humility, that you can love each other even when it's hard. That commitment, that vow you take on your wedding day, that you take that seriously. And I think that marriage is just about the hardest thing we're going to do in life, right up there with parenting. But I think the more we can be honest and walk through it with humility, just the better example we're setting for our kids.
I just could not agree more. I'm sorry. Excuse me. I lost my voice there for just a second. I think that I could not agree more, Monica. Mm-hmm. I really couldn't. Because when our marriage is stable, mm-hmm. my kids look at that.
Yes.
And they automatically feel more stable. They
yes.
automatically feel like everything is okay. Mm-hmm. And that can be really hard. So what are the ways that you have invested in your marriage?
Yes. I think that's so true. I love that you pointed out the security that gives kids, because in the book, I even reflect on my own childhood and how I remember, most of us probably do, that day or that moment that divorce became a reality, that you looked around you and you realized, oh my goodness, some parents, some of you listening, I'm sure it was your own parents, but sometimes marriages don't work. And what a scary feeling that brought me as a child, and how I know that when I realized that my parents were committed to one another, though it wasn't a perfect marriage, they were committed to marriage, it brought me so much security. So I think that investing in our marriages is so important. And kind of like faith, It's not rocket science. It's actually some of the most basic things. It's spending time communicating. It is taking time for those date nights, or if you can get away together regularly. It's things like just honoring each other and asking forgiveness where you need it. It's some of those basic things, but that too takes intentionality. You can't hack it. You can't fake it. You have to put the time in every day. And, you know, you need to have fun with your spouse. You need to do the things that you did when you were first falling in love. And it's easy to get out of that habit, but with some intentionality, I think you can return to all of those things.
Yes, I think that has been a really hard thing, because when my kids were younger, my husband and I had a lot of guilt mm. about putting time into our marriage. And mm-hmm. we thought, oh, well, we don't want to leave them with a babysitter, or, mm-hmm. you know, we need to be there, or that kind of thing. But what I've discovered is that when we are okay, again, they are okay.
Yep.
That is their whole
yes.
world. And so we had to really learn ways to make that a priority, mm. to prioritize our time and our relationship together, to schedule that date night. Now, sometimes that meant being creative and waiting until they went to bed.
Yep.
And having a home date night,
yes.
you know, where we would get takeout and we would set it up with candles and hope that nobody was going to wake up,
right?
That kind of thing would happen. Well, when we come back, we'll be talking about the next elements of what Monica has been talking about, raising kids who like their family and do the dishes without being asked. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, friends, to this special edition of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. We are coming to you actually live together from the island of Oahu. I am here with my friend Monica Swanson, who is a Hawaii living homeschooling boy mom of four, and she is the author of Raising Amazing, Bringing Up Kids Who Love God, Like Their Family, and Do the Dishes Without Being Asked. So we've been talking about nurturing their faith and, you know, the things that we have to do every day, simple practices and rhythms. And Monica, you made the comment that it's not rocket science, which I just have to laugh about because no. I'm married to a rocket scientist, right, who's amused at the perception that I'm the smart one in the relationship when he is a literal science. And let me tell you, that joke never gets old in my house. My kids will say, oh, that's not rocket science, Mom.
I love it.
I know. But you know, the great thing is these things aren't. And I think that's the encouragement of everything that we're talking about, that this is attainable.
Yes.
This is doable. When families who are struggling, they look at other families and they think, why can't my family be like that? Yeah. Well, they are. Yes. And we all have our own imperfections. We all have our struggles. And I think that, you know, healthy families are not perfect. Mm-mm. That is a lie that we tell ourselves. That is just not the truth. Healthy families still have conflict. Mm-hmm. Healthy families still have kids who struggle with character issues, who maybe don't do the dishes from time to time, or more serious things. Now, one of the things that I really appreciate in your book, Monica, we were just talking about our marriage, is that your boys' voices, all of them, all of your guys' voices are here in this book. Yes. So tell us about that special feature.
Yes. Well, probably my favorite feature of the book is that at the end of each chapter, there's a word to the dads written by my husband, who I always say is kind of the true hero behind our family because he's a lot quieter than I am. He's not out front. But he is just such a man of wisdom and faith, and he's just been an amazing dad. And so I know that men don't typically read as many parenting books as moms do. I don't like to generalize, but I think it's true. And so I decided it might be helpful if he wrote kind of, I call it the Cliff Notes version. So at the end of each chapter, there's just a short word to the dads. So as the moms read this book, they might pass off the book and say, okay, this part's for you. Because, oh, fathers are so important. Men are so important to our families, and we need them so desperately to rise up and really take that role seriously. But then in addition to that, each chapter has some thoughts from one of my boys, kind of just sharing from their perspective. I wanted to really make this as honest and true and real as it could be. And so my boys are sharing some fun thoughts from their perspective on each of the topics. So it was really a family affair. Really fun.
That is really fun to do that. And I like how you talked about it with the Cliff Notes version, because I've learned this as a boy mom. Now, you know, my girls, they will literally tell me, Mom, hold your questions until the end. Like, let me tell you everything and then you can ask questions. And I love it. And then I'll talk to my boys and I'll say, how was your day? And they say, fine. And I say, well, what was fine about it? Well, Mom, it was just fine. Yeah. Like, it was just a day. Yes. And I said, well, tell me one good thing. That, Mom, why are you asking me so many questions? Like, it was fine. Yes. And even the other day when I had apologized to my son for something that I did, I said, are you sure you're okay? He goes, Mom, I'm a guy. Like, I moved on.
I've
already
moved on.
Like, I'm already thinking about lunch.
Yes.
This is not a big deal.
Love it.
But one of the things that you talk about in your book is understanding the power of influences. Mm-hmm. And when we're looking at our kids and even just our homes, the influences that are coming feel like a cultural tidal wave right now.
Yes.
How do you manage that?
Yes. Well, when I've been asked to really narrow down, like, you know, people who haven't read my book, and they might say, okay, you do parenting stuff. What are the top three things that I should be thinking about? You know, maybe they just have young children and they're like, what are the top three things? Influences rise up to one of the very top. I mean, definitely I start with faith. A foundation of faith is number one, but probably second in line is the power of influences. And I think that it's easy. Again, all of this, I would like to be clear, there's no judgment, no shame here, because we are busy and parents are all trying to do a good job. Most parents are working, they have family, they have their own parents. There's a whole lot of things going on. So I don't want anyone to feel condemnation on this, but it's more like, let's zoom out and really look at what's going on in our families, and the influences around our children are going to shape them. It is a biblical principle that goes back to, you know, Solomon writes about it in Proverbs. It's in, the New Testament and the Old Testament. You become like the company you keep. Bad company corrupts good character. And so there's no way around this. Your kids might like to tell you, oh, mom, you know, I'm not going to become like my friends. It's okay. Let me hang out with them. But I'm going to say, let's be really, really careful about the people, the online influences, all the different things that are in our kids' lives, because you will become like the company you keep. And it doesn't sound like fun to be the parent that has to really kind of police or navigate this thing of influence, but it can save you from a multitude of heartaches and headaches down the road. So, yeah.
And I think one of the easiest ways to do that is what you talk about, the way that you phrase it is make your home the hub. Mm-hmm. Because if your kids are under your roof, yeah. if they are bringing their friends to mm-hmm. your house,
yes.
and you're seeing that and you're able to invest in those relationships, mm-hmm. it's so much easier to do. But I hear a lot of parents that will say, you know, my house is really not set up for entertaining, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or my house isn't as nice as,
exactly.
you know, the other person's house, or we don't have a pool, or mm-hmm. we don't have a basketball court,
yeah.
or, you know, we're just not the cool parents, you
yeah.
know, like, I don't think people would want to come hang out mm-hmm. over here. What do you say to those excuses?
Yes. Oh, I love it when that comes up, because I love to assure people that from my experience, everybody I've talked to, kids don't need all that stuff. What they want is a welcoming place, even to have a friend's mom and dad care about them. They may not have a home where mom and dad are interested in asking them questions and having fun with them. So if you can be welcoming, if you've got some food, okay, you do need some food in the house. You got to have some food. And it doesn't have to be fancy food. You got to have some food. Hey, my boys entertain themselves with a deck of cards for hours. So it's not about expensive toys. Have something that they can do, yes, and then have a warm and welcoming place. And that's going to surprise you how much kids are just drawn to a family that invites them in, feeds them, and cares about them.
That's exactly right. And what I find is that my kids, they're friends when they come over. They like to just join our family mm-hmm, in mm-hmm. whatever we're doing.
Yes.
We don't have to do anything special. And it doesn't always have to be separate either.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly.
They might go play basketball in the driveway, mm-hmm. but my husband might be out there playing with them,
yes.
you know, trying his best to keep up. And he comes in and tells me, you know, some days I feel really young and then I play basketball. And I'm like, I am not as young as my brain is telling
yes.
me. But, you know, if we're playing a board game mm-hmm. or we're watching a movie together, they don't care that
yes.
your house is messy.
Yes.
They don't care. They really want someone to see them mm-hmm. and to invest in them and just to ask them questions,
yes.
just to initiate conversation.
Yes.
Now, I think sometimes our own kids can, you know, put up more barriers really than other kids do.
Yes.
They're like, oh no, mom, don't ask that.
But you're so embarrassing, mom.
Oh, was I breathing again, honey? Oh, I'm sorry.
Exactly.
That's
so
how
true.
That goes. But that is really, really important to do that.
Yeah.
Another thing that is a good boundary is you talk a lot about the no's and the yeses. And this is a source of great conflict for parents. You know, mm-hmm. what do you say yes to, mm-hmm. but what do you feel the freedom to say no to? So
exactly.
how do you, as you say, parent with your kids' very best in mind,
yes.
with your no's and yeses?
Yes, again, I believe this comes back to just that intentionality, and I feel like that word is overused. I probably overuse it, but really to think through why you're saying no and why you're saying yes. And sometimes our no's are based on, you know, us just wanting, we're on a power trip, or we just want to be the authority. But oftentimes, no is really, really important. And I do acknowledge in this chapter that most of us are kind of wired one way or another. And oftentimes God brings together a husband and a wife who are opposite. So in my marriage, I'm a yes loving parent. I want to say yes to everything that makes my kids happy. My husband's pretty comfortable saying no. So as much as that can be challenging, I also see how God wired us and how that really benefits the kids, because they do need both. But I think it's important to realize that, you know, even all the way back in the Garden of Eden, God set up so many yeses, this beautiful world with so many yeses, and then he put that one no right in the middle. And I say in this chapter that I think that God was teaching us some really good parenting there, because really, he was setting up a situation where he wanted his children to trust him, to to accept a no because they trusted his love for them. And in the same way, that's our hope in raising kids and saying no, is that they're going to trust that when we say no, it's because of our love for them. And really, ultimately, we want to train our kids' hearts to obey us and trust us, because one day we want them to obey and trust the voice of God in their life. And so the sooner we can teach them that we love them, and that's why there's a no there, the more likely they are to grow up to understand that in their relationship with God.
I love that perspective. And I think, you know, as parents, we agonize a lot more about our no's mm-hmm. when we really should be thinking about our yeses. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that we can say yes to mm-hmm. that we don't. And if you really pay attention, a lot of times what kids are asking you for is your time. Mm-hmm. And we mm-hmm. subconsciously tell them no. Yeah. I think a lot, you mm-hmm. know, just I'm working. I'm uh-huh. cooking. I don't have time for that mm-hmm. right now. I'm busy. And so I think whenever you're telling your kids no like that, it really is communicating a very powerful message. Mm-hmm. And so I think to say yes whenever you possibly mm-hmm. can, it makes your no's carry more
absolutely.
Weight. You
yes.
know?
So I don't it know. Does. Well, and even along those lines, I'm sure somebody out there listening might deal with technology and the struggle with screen time. But even on that topic, I love to say, instead of being so concerned about the rules and how much you have to draw the line on this device or that device, what if you focused on all the yeses, all the areas that you can tell your kids to do as much as you like of that? You know, you can get fresh air, run, jump, build, read, create, do artwork. Like, let's bring up all the options they have, that it's a big yes. And then there's less battle over those few things that are a no. So I think you're absolutely right there, Jessica.
That is so true. Now, let's go back to this concept of dish duty and making character a really big deal. You talked about that a little bit at the beginning, yeah. but just go back and revisit mm-hmm. that. I think that deserves a slower sure. walkthrough.
Yes. Well, I think most people will agree that if you look around you at the culture today, just character is not celebrated. I think maybe 100 years ago, it was just assumed that there was a high priority on character qualities like being loyal, being honest, being kind to your neighbors and people you do and don't know. And today that's just not valued in the same way. In fact, there's such an emphasis on self, on, you know, you being you, chasing your dreams at all costs. And so
living
your truth. Yes. So I think with all of that in mind, we as believers need to really put a great focus and a great emphasis on character, because the battle is great, and it's really going to take a lot of our focus in order to even come close to outweighing what they're getting in the world. So you can't overemphasize these character qualities. From the time kids are young, it might just be simple manners, saying please and thank you, looking somebody in the eye, shaking their hand when you meet them, good old-fashioned character qualities that most of us grew up with to some extent. But then it extends even further into really thinking through why you do what you do. It's not just the behavior, but it's the heart behind the behavior. And Jesus said, you know, it's out of the overflow of the heart that the mouth speaks. So how can we focus on the heart? Well, this is going to come back to faith. It's going to come back to good conversations about modeling, all of the things we've already talked about. But then kids do need some discipline. And that's where I think chores can come in really handy. You assign kids chores with the expectation that they'll do them and do them well. And then you make that a daily routine. Now, no, my kids are not perfect at doing the dishes without being asked. I've got a certain 13-year-old at home that sometimes this is a battle, but I'm not giving up. I think sometimes parents throw their hands up and say, he's such a slob. She's so lazy. I just give. And I'm like, no, 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 no. Don't give up. The world needs your kids to have character.
Well, that's so true. And that's something I often coach parents that, and what you're talking about is sometimes when kids have a behavioral struggle, we generalize that into a character trait. So they're having trouble cleaning their room. They're having trouble doing the dishes. And then all of a sudden we're using that shaming language that, why are you always so lazy? Why can you never do anything that I ask you to do? Why does this always have to be a battle? Why are you so difficult? Mm-hmm. And we're giving them very deeply personal messages about their character, because what parents don't understand, what I hear a lot is parents will say, my kids are not, they're not listening to me, but they are. Mm-hmm. They are listening. Their minds are like a police scanner, mm-hmm. and they're picking up everything that you say wow. about them.
Yes.
And they are cataloging that to, this is who I am.
Yes, yes.
It's not what I do, it's who I am. Mm-hmm. And that can be a really heavy burden
yes.
for us to carry as parents. But I think that we need to really be careful when we're using that to generalize mm-hmm. that. I don't know if you have anything else to
add. Oh, for sure. No, I love what you're saying, because I do believe that there's that, we can use our words to speak life, and we can also use our words to bring death. And I think that that's what you're saying, is just that can really break their spirit and discourage them to the point that they give up. They think, well, I guess I am just this way. So I think for us to slow down and think through what we're saying, to speak to the problem, to that situation, but not to who they are. And then to just remind them over and over of the who they are in Christ, who God made them to be, the potential they have, find those seeds, I say, those seeds of good character qualities, and call them out in such a way that they'll begin to flourish and grow them all the more.
Well, I was just in a pineapple field at a Dole plantation. And the first time that I went there, Monica, I shared this yesterday, but I saw these fields of red dirt. Mm. And there's, you know, people that are out there gardening and tending to those fields of red dirt while they're waiting an average of 2 years mm-hmm. for a pineapple to grow. And this is what I think our kids need to see, that confidence in our eyes, that we have confidence in the seed that we planted,
so good.
That it will grow in another season. And we mm-hmm. have to remember as parents that planting and harvesting do not happen in the same season.
You're so
and
right.
we have to be patient for that harvest.
Yes.
Well, when we come back, we'll talk about sibling rivalries and how siblings can become friends and making that happen. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, aloha, friends, and welcome back to our special Hawaii edition of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. I am sitting here in paradise with my friend Monica Swanson, a Hawaii living, homeschooling boy mom of four and the author of Raising Amazing, Bringing Up Kids Who Love God, Like Their Family, and Do the Dishes Without Being Asked. Yes, we are talking about straight up, you know, magicalness, right?
Unicorns.
No, but again, we're talking about simple things that are not easy. And before the break, we were talking about the fact that planting and harvesting do not happen in the same season. Mm-hmm. And Monica, you had a verse to share to encourage
yes.
our hearts there.
One of my favorite verses that just comes back to me over and over is Galatians 6:9. This says, do not grow weary in doing good, for in due season you will reap a harvest if you don't give up. And I love that, because that picture you painted of the pineapple seeds and how it takes seasons before they grow. I think as parents sometimes, and especially in the culture we live in where we want everything immediate, instant, quick fix, it's hard to think that what you're pouring into your kids is actually going to grow fruit. But really, I believe with all my heart it does. If you just keep consistent, keep praying, keep communicating, you will reap a harvest in God's timing.
That is so encouraging. And I think sometimes, you know, we treat parenting either like a chia pet or even like an online assistant. You know how the little box pops up and says, how can I help you?
Yes.
Our kids come to us a problem and we're like, oh, how can I help you?
Yes.
Please type in something quick and easy, and here's your solution, and please fill out a survey about my performance.
That's so true.
You know, that's how it is when really these things are difficult.
They are.
And we may have a great conversation or what we feel like, you know, we're on our A game as parents.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, it seems like nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't know 3 or 4 months later.
Yes.
They come back and they say, you remember that thing that you said to me?
Yep.
I've been thinking about that.
It's
and
so
you
true.
Just, it blows your mind. You
it's
know?
So
you think,
true.
How is that happening?
Yes.
Well, another thing that is hard for people to wrap their minds around is having siblings who get along.
Yes.
Having siblings with close relationships. Mm. Now, this is something I honestly did not grow up with. It took a long time. I'm the oldest of five, and now I'm very close with my siblings. Very, very close, actually. but it took time mm-hmm. to develop that. And I think that when I started, you know, to become my mom journey, I wanted my kids to be close. And Monica, I gotta say, I think I overdid it. So there is something to be said for that side of the spectrum, because when my oldest went to college, it broke second baby. Mm-hmm. You know, she was so sad. Mm-hmm. They were so apart. But they were together. So what are your secrets? How do you get your boys to get along?
Yes. Well, first, I like to encourage all the younger parents who are like, my kids just fight all the time. They bicker. They can't share. And I think parents tend to think they're the only ones. And I'm like, no. That's a very normal part of the process. And even though my four sons are currently best friends, all four of them with each other, they did all of that too. And sometimes they still do. If you could have seen my home after dinner last night, there was a certain battle over who was going to do the dishes. So keep me humble here. But I will say that I think that probably the greatest key, if I'm going to tell somebody, you know, if there's one thing I'm going to encourage you to do to make sure your kids grow up to be good friends, is make sure they spend time together. It's so easy today in our world. Kids are so busy between school and sports and activities. And then on the weekends, they want to run and hang out with their friends. But I say, if we are intentional, again, that word, intentional about setting aside time that's really just for the family, just for the kids, letting them get bored together. Because when you're bored, you get creative and you have to kind of figure out things to do together. I also like to point to vacations and how I love the idea that sometimes you can bring a friend on a vacation, and I get that that kind of helps sometimes keep the peace in the family. But sometimes going on vacation with just your own family forces those kids to create experiences and have adventures that become great memories together. So really being intentional about time together is my number one tip.
I think that's a great tip. And, you know, we did that in my family too. So if one of the boys had a sports game, then we all went. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody else has a school performance or something like that, we're all there. We're all there together and creating that intentional space. And, you know, Monica, it's not something I take for granted, because not too long ago in the summer, I realized here I am at home on a Friday night with all of my kids here. And they actually want to be here, you know, want to spend time together. But that can be that's a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, sometimes what you said is important, that parents have that misperception that like, oh, it's like, you know, the Partridge Family all the time at home. That's not true.
Right.
There are still fights. There are still hurt feelings. Mm-hmm. There are still moments of brokenness. But I will just intentionally sit my kids down and model for them.
Yes.
What does that conversation look like? No, you need to let, you know, her speak and let her express her feelings. And now, no, she has a point there. You need to say you're sorry.
And referee,
I don't think you have
to.
Yes, referee a little. I don't think you have to referee everything. Mm-hmm. But sometimes just that modeling is really important.
Absolutely. And I think too, we have to realize that what the kids are learning through this are life skills that they're going to apply later to other relationships, to job, to marriage. So sometimes helping them figure out just how to resolve a conflict, how to move on after a conflict, those are important life skills. So it's not all bad when kids aren't getting along either.
That is very true. And, you know, and my kids, they are certainly not perfect, but they are so great together. Mm. And I think one of the challenges that we have experienced is that they're all very different. Yes. And sometimes as parents, when you have multiple kids, you tend to take a templated approach, because you'll hear those three words from your kids if you don't. That's not fair, right?
Right.
Why do they get to do that at this age when I didn't get to do that? But you talk in your book a lot about having an individualized parenting approach.
Oh, you really need to, because like you said, everybody is so different. And I think that kids need to know that in life, you're not going to be treated just like everybody else, that whatever you're dealing with, we're going to work with you on that topic. We're not going to parent across the board the same way. And so I think there's an important element there of just spreading your time as much as you can across the kids, giving them all attention, loving them all, but dealing with things individually is super important in our parenting.
It is. And that can, so that really, those things that they're privileges that they're able mm-hmm. to have, they should be responsibility based,
yes,
not age based. And
right.
I think setting that expectation and being really honest about it, saying, mm-hmm. hey, you're all different. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to parent you all
yes.
differently. I'm going to meet you where you are.
So
exactly.
Good.
Just saying that, you know, that you may need more support here. Mm-hmm. You may need less support mm-hmm. and less supervision here. So here are the pros and the cons to that. So yes, your sibling may have gotten this, but they also struggled with this. And here's how you can meet them in that
exactly.
moment.
Yes, yes. And I think there's different seasons too. And they need to know that what you don't see, you know, I say to my 13-year-old is what you don't know about is when your 19-year-old brother was younger, there was some discipline that went on that you didn't even know about. So trust us on this one. We have been parenting all along.
Yes. And I think that's important too, uh-huh. you know, to spare their dignity.
Yes.
Just, you know, to handle that. And something that my kids can get frustrated about is when I'm navigating their conflict, you know, they feel like I'm just coming down on them, you know, but I'm thinking, no, when I'm talking to that person, I'm telling
exactly.
them everything
yes.
that they did. And that's important too.
Exactly. I've said to my sons often, when one of them in particular will say, why aren't you dealing with my brother who's doing this, I'm like, because the way you're responding makes me have to deal with you. If you would just stop and let me handle it, I might be working with your brother right now. So let mom be mom. Quit trying to
parent. We have that conversation all the time with my boys with retaliation.
Uh-huh.
Like, retaliation is always going to get you in
yes.
more trouble.
Yes.
You know, that's so hard.
Yes. And that's why I too think that keeping our kids in the book of Proverbs is so key, because there is going to be a proverb for just about every parenting issue that comes up. If our kids are reading the book of Proverbs, they cannot argue that they've just read something that we're talking about in that moment. So it's pretty handy.
You bring up a great point, though, because our own wisdom is just foolishness compared
yes.
to God's wisdom. And I think for some parents, that can feel really awkward. Like mm-hmm. if you just start saying scripture, you know?
Yes.
But I think just being authentic in that awkwardness, mm-hmm. but there's something really powerful about mm-hmm. following that up, you know,
yes.
like giving something out of Proverbs. So what would be an example that you would give?
Oh, for sure. Well, one thing we've really done with our sons, and I think is great for especially in the teenage years. But to have kids read a chapter from the book of Proverbs each day, because there's 31 chapters of Proverbs, it's pretty easy to just say, okay, whatever day of the month it is, let's read that chapter. And then at the dinner table, we might highlight one or two things that really stood out to you. And so it might be something like, you know, stop a quarrel before it begins, or something about gossip, the way you talk about others. And I think when something comes up at the dinner table, it's a key time to be able to say, wait, remember this morning. Okay, who read their Proverbs today? Or, you know, I read a lot with my 13-year-old. I'll have him come in and we'll read a chapter of Proverbs together. But it's a great way to say, hey, this isn't, like you said, just mom and dad's wisdom.
Yeah.
This is wisdom that comes from God. It's in his word. And there's a reason he gives it to us, because it's so practical and so applicable to all the things we deal with in life.
That's so true. And one of the examples that I can give that I often talk to my kids about is actually from Psalm 84:11. The Lord God is a sun and a shield. He gives grace and glory. No good thing does he withhold from those who walk uprightly.
So good.
And so a lot of times, you know, my kids will come home and they will feel like they have been cheated or mm-hmm. denied. And sometimes it's true.
Sure. Yeah.
It seems like, you know, they have been mistreated or looked over for an opportunity. And I can tell them as a mom, like, hey, I think you're great and
yes.
you're wonderful.
Right. You deserve that.
Yes. And I love you and you're here. But there is something really powerful mm-hmm. in that moment. If I can look at them and say, the Lord God is a sun and a shield. Mm-hmm. He will light and protect your path.
Yes.
He gives grace and he gives glory. He will not withhold a good thing from you mm-hmm. if you're walking uprightly. And I think that's an encouragement, because so often they may think in their own mind, if they're trying to fix it from a secular perspective, I've got to practice harder. I've got to, mm-hmm. you know, have better fashion or improve my
yes.
social skills or all of these things so that I can get to what I want. But if they can just get to that place where they think my responsibility is to walk daily with mm-hmm. the Lord and learning to trust those outcomes to him.
Yes.
I I don't think we can do anything better as parents.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you can just speak the scripture to them, because that's really gives them confidence too, I think, in the word of God, and being able to say, wait, I want to know that. So in that moment, I think it just inspires them to want to know the word of God more too. And it just gives that authority to the words that you would want to say as a mom. But now it's coming from God's word, not just from a mama's heart. So I love that.
Yes. And that's where I think what you said earlier, Monica, about us modeling things or parentamorphosis, you know, yes. Modeling that great life. That is so important. So I think about a time when my husband actually went through about 20 reconstructive surgeries on his jaw.
Oh, wow.
He likes to tell everyone he was a hockey player, but really it was like a croquet accident when he was 9. Okay. It's extreme croquet. I do not, out of 5 stars. Do not recommend. And it came back to him later in life when kids were like in junior high. And so it was pretty severe. And he went through about a year where he did not have any teeth because he was having this reconstructive. And then he got Bell's palsy. So it was a severe case that was prolonged. And so half of his face is paralyzed he has no teeth. And I'm telling you, Monica, if that was me, I would be in my room. Uh-huh. With the covers over my head,
right?
No visitors, like not happening. And he did not do that. So during that time, we took a trip with our oldest daughter to New York City, and I took a photo of them. It was very iconic, you know, Radio City Music Hall, the yellow cab. And his smile is just terrible.
I can imagine.
Just awful. And with my daughter, that is the photo that she printed out and put on her desk.
Wow.
And I'm looking at that thinking, would I have had the courage and the humility to like have a picture of myself that way? And I did ask her about it. And she said, Mom, that picture reminds me to choose joy. I can choose joy in my circumstances. And I thought, okay, well, his job here is done. He is the rocket. Yes. Maybe that was rocket science. I don't know.
No, that is so beautiful.
Where have you had in your experience with your kids? What is an example maybe that you could give?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking that pretty much on a daily basis, anytime that we walk through the stressors and the pressures of life, and I think of my own husband too, that just brings all these thoughts to mind of some of the stresses he's faced as a hospital physician. Mm-hmm. And when he's not able to bring his A game necessarily to parenting, where he doesn't feel like he is on his game and being the kind of dad he wants to be. But I think just showing up and modeling just, again, that authentic humility and that walk where he's still going to be there. He's still going to show up, and he's still going to maybe not be the dad that they, you know, you have this picture in your mind, I think, of what you want to be as a parent. And sometimes it's more that consistent loyalty, faithfulness to the family. But that's what I think of more is his, what my husband's modeled as a father has just been really beautiful in a similar way.
Absolutely. And he shares that all throughout this book. And I think I've told you before, I can just see all of these women, you know, these wives reading this book in bed and saying like, honey, you know, like, look at this.
Exactly.
Well, you should definitely get the book. You need to follow. Monica, where can we find you?
Oh, thank you. My website, monicaswanson.com, is the best place to find everything. And if you're on Instagram, I'm at monicaswanson_.
And you can follow along to see what it's like to raise 4 boys in Hawaii. I know, it's so fun. The book is Raising Amazing, Bringing Up Kids Who Love God, Like Their Family, and Do the Dishes Without Being Asked. Well, Monica, you have been such an encouragement to me. I personally love following you on Instagram, and it's been such a joy to get to come and meet you actually here in Hawaii. Thank you for being with us, and I'm sure we'll have you back.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a blessing to be here, and aloha to everyone listening.
Aloha.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.